Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire workers with disabilities. Information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of disabilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
On this special post-election edition of Capitol Report, we'll look ahead to what Governor Rick Scott may do in his second term and whether Democrats have any hope of ever retaking the governor's mansion.
I don't know. I keep waiting for the South Florida liberals to say, you guys keep nominating moderates from the Tampa Bay area and they keep losing.
Also this week, new state lawmakers who will be sworn in later this month share their messages for the people of Florida.
Please don't get discouraged from all the negative campaigning and all the negative media, because there are a lot of good people that are still trying to do positive things in our communities.
We'll also talk about the constitutional amendment that passed, along with the two that didn't, and we'll recall a time when a large part of Florida's population couldn't vote in an election at all. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. As you probably heard, Florida Governor Rick Scott has been reelected, so what can we expect him to do over the next 4 years? We get predictions about Scott's next term as governor from reporter William March of the Tampa Tribune and University of South Florida political science professor Dr. Susan McManus. They spoke with Carson Cooper from member station WUSF in Tampa.
I think you're going to see the more moderate Scott, because the Republicans in the legislature know that they're looking at a very contentious 2016 presidential race in the state. And they also see the benefits that accrued to the governor when he talked positively about doing things on the environment. And talking, I'm sure you'll see more about transportation and infrastructure. Some of his ads featured ports and so forth. And I also think you'll see a more moderate stance on some of the education funding. They've got to do something with higher ed, to especially on the heels of people thinking that our state's education system is not producing globally competitive students. So I think you'll see a more moderate Scott, pushed by a more moderate Republican legislature, because a lot of the younger Republicans that were elected are far less interested in social issues.
William March, does this blowout of Republican governors put to rest any hope of Medicaid expansion?
I'm not certain about that. I talked yesterday to a couple of legislative leaders, incoming legislative leaders, including Andy Gardner and the outgoing House Speaker Will Weatherford, who was himself the main obstacle to Medicaid expansion. They're open to it. The incoming leaders are. Weatherford is no more open to it than he was before, but he's no longer. He won't be House Speaker anymore. Gardner is open to it, but Tom Lee, one thing that Tom Lee said to me, he's state senator from Hillsborough County, a highly influential state senator, he said there's no point in our wasting our time in the Senate unless we find a dance partner in the House. Now, Governor Scott has said he's in favor of that, but he hasn't really stuck his neck far out to bring it about, so I would consider it an open question, a possibility, but not a strong likelihood.
And William March, Florida Democrats seem to be stuck on nominating moderates, and that has not worked out well for them. Moderate Jim Davis of Tampa lost. The late Bill McBride lost. His wife Alex Sink lost. All three, by the way, from Hillsborough County. And so whom did they nominate this year? A moderate from the Bay Area, Charlie Crist. What is going on with the Democratic Party in Florida?
I don't know. I keep waiting for the South Florida liberals to say, you guys keep nominating moderates from the Tampa Bay Area and they keep losing. It's happened four times in a row now, five if you counted Buddy McKay from Citrus County, mm-hmm. Alex Sink, Bill McBride, Jim Davis, and now Charlie Crist. But in spite of all that, if you had to pick a front runner for the 2018 Democratic nomination, it would be another moderate from the Tampa area, Tampa Mayor Bob Buckhorn.
Susan McManus, what about that?
Well, part of the problem is I see the pattern, certainly, and I think it's very valid. But think of this. Twice now, Democrats have ended up supporting Charlie Crist. The first time, they dissed Kendrick Meek. for Charlie Crist, the independent. This time they dissed Nan Rich for Charlie Crist. So a lot of it, and a lot of that dissing came where from? Huge Democratic-rich South Florida.
That was USF political science professor Dr. Susan McManus and reporter William March of the Tampa Tribune talking with Carson Cooper from member station WUSF in Tampa. The midterm election gave Florida Republicans 17 new members in the state house, while Democrats are welcoming 6 to their minority caucus. As Jessica Palumbo reports, that's a net gain of 6 seats for the GOP.
Republicans needed to defeat at least 5 incumbent Democrats to achieve the supermajority. They ousted 6. One of their successful candidates comes from Orlando.
My name is Renee Placencia. I also go by Coach P. I'm a high school teacher and track coach at Colonial High School, where I've been for the last 15 years.
Placencia says his proximity to young people makes him want to fight for educational reforms like less student testing and fairer teacher assessments. Coach P defeated one-term Democratic Representative Joe Saunders by just under a 2% margin. The coach says he believes he had the home field advantage over the incumbent.
This is a community that, although Orlando is turning into a rather big city, it's still a small town for many of us who were born and raised there.
And the 41-year-old first-time public office holder says he thinks he got a boost from the top of the ticket.
I think a lot of Republicans came out because they are happy with the job that Governor Scott did. And it's, the sweep that Republicans had statewide is a testament to the job that he's done.
The sweep, of course, was not limited to Florida. The GOP picked up enough U.S. Senate seats to get a majority and also flipped a handful of governorships from blue to red. Florida State University political scientist Carol Weissert says national sentiment could have trickled down to Florida State House races.
There's a lot of thought maybe that there was a lot of dissatisfaction with the president. It's hard to believe that goes down to the state legislative level, but possibly it did.
She says the supermajority shouldn't change much in the legislature because Republicans already had large majorities in both chambers. And the power to override vetoes becomes less important, she says, than it would have been if Democrat Charlie Crist had won the governor's seat. But despite chambers packed with Republicans, 6 newly elected Democrats have chosen to join the legislature's ranks.
My name is Bobby DeBose. I'm as of Tuesday, I'm a former commissioner in the city of Fort Lauderdale. Served there for over 5 years.
DeBose replaces another Democrat, Perry Thurston, who was term-limited out this year. The 43-year-old insurance adjuster and father of 2 young children says he realizes the uphill battle his party faces in the legislature, but he says he has some experience building consensus.
And in Fort Lauderdale, I'm the only minority on that commission, and so I've have experience of being in the minority, but being effective. I mean, at the end of the day, it's about relationships.
DeBose says as a city commissioner, he brings to the legislature a wariness of unfunded mandates the state house sometimes hands down to the local guys. And he also says he's concerned about improving public schools. He, along with Placencia and 21 other new Florida House members, will be sworn in the third week in November in Tallahassee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Still to come on Capitol Report, Florida voters keep the existing state cabinet in power.
The voters spoke, and now the governor and the cabinet, as well as the House and Senate, are just going to continue to do the great work for the state that they have.
Some Florida voters are criticizing the state's elevated threshold for passing statewide ballot measures.
The majority votes for this to pass, and we're still having like this dispute about it. Why is it 60%?
North Florida congressional pick Gwen Graham is gearing up to build bridges as she heads to Washington, D.C.
I cannot tell you all how thrilled I am to stand before you, the newly elected first congresswoman in the second congressional district.
And on a week when voting was pretty much taken for granted, we'll revisit a time in our history when certain parts of the population had to fight for that right.
While the rabbis were being arrested, Negro and white demonstrators clad in bathing suits jumped into the pool. Brock, frantic with rage, began dumping an acid cleaning agent into the water.
Florida's cabinet will look exactly the same as it did when its members were elected back in 2010. In this election recap, Sasha Cordner takes a look at their respective races, including the attorney general's race.
Republican incumbent Pam Bondi defeated both her challengers after receiving 55% of the vote. And during her speech, she talked about her fight in the gay marriage ban issue. She also reminded her supporters of her involvement in going against the Affordable Care Act, also called Obamacare.
This wasn't about politics, nor was it about ideology. This was about the law.
Yes. And she also vowed to continue her fight for a number of issues, including her anti-human trafficking efforts.
We just formed the Council on Human Trafficking that I'll be chairing for the next 3 years. We're fighting a war on drugs still, and we're not going to give up.
Bondi also thanked her two opponents for a race well fought. On a 3-1 margin, Bondi outraised George Sheldon, her Democrat challenger, and the former head of the Florida Department of Children and Families. Still, Sheldon says he's proud of the campaign he ran and he hopes to work with Bondi in the future, adding he's glad he stuck to his principles in this race.
Speaking up for children, saying that everyone in this country ought to be equal and they ought to have the right to love the person that they do love and to marry that individual, but to say that every person in this country has a right to affordable health care.
As for Tallahassee attorney Bill Wolsifer, more than 168,000 people voted for the Libertarian candidate. He says even getting close to 3% is huge for a third-party candidate, and they can only build from here.
People are afraid to vote for against the candidate. They want to vote. They're afraid if they vote for the Libertarian, the candidate they don't want to win will win. We got to overcome that.
And Bondi wasn't the only one of the night.
I have been informed that the AP has called our race and that we won.
That's Florida Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam, who took more than 58% of the vote. Florida Chief Financial Officer Jeff Atwater was also elected to a second term with more than 58% of the vote. And he thanked voters on behalf of the Florida cabinet during his election night speech.
And it looked like overwhelmingly the people of Florida are giving us that second chance. So to everybody in Florida, we want to say thank you. We won't let you down. We'll hustle again for you for four more years. Thank you very, very much on that front.
Florida Democratic Party Chair Allison Tant says despite the overall losses in this year's election, it speaks to the strong loyalty and support Democrats still have.
I'm very thankful for people who put themselves up to run, because when you do take on a leadership role, you become a pinata in this state. And, they did a good job. Connected with voters, and yes, they did get some support, and I'm thankful for the votes they got.
Meanwhile, coming off some big wins, Republican Party of Florida Chair Leslie Dewar says she believes voters have spoken and they like the GOP leadership that's in place.
You know, we ran an aggressive campaign from the governor, the entire cabinet, that we put families first and we put jobs first and education.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Florida voters overwhelmingly said yes to a dedicated funding source for land conservation and no to giving governors more power over the judiciary. Lynn Hatter reports another high-profile amendment fell just shy of what it needed to bring medical marijuana to Florida.
Nearly half the states have legalized marijuana either for recreational or for medicinal purposes, but Florida is not one of them.
At the end of the day, the Florida voters said, we don't want this codified in our Constitution. We don't want these loopholes. We don't want this amendment.
That's Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd. Representing the views of the Florida Sheriff's Association, he's been a critic of an amendment to legalize medical marijuana in Florida. The effort was largely backed by trial lawyer John Morgan, who poured millions of dollars of his own money into the Yes on 2 campaign. But the amendment fell 2 points shy of the needed 60% support to get into the state's constitution. Morgan and supporters of the amendment say they plan to try again in 2016, when a presidential election will tend to bring out a larger swath of voters. Still, the night was not a total loss for supporters of amendments, and one, Amendment 1 that is, has been enshrined in the state's governing document. It dedicates a percentage of revenue from real estate fees to purchase land for environmental purposes, and Will Abriger with the Trust for Public Land hails it as a victory.
We hope that this sends a resounding message to whoever the next governor is and to the Florida legislature that Florida voters care about protecting the quality of our water, our natural areas, and our wildlife habitat, and they, I think, have overwhelmingly demonstrated their support for increased funding, increased state funding for water and land conservation.
Since 2009, funding for the Florida Forever Land Buying Program plummeted from a high of $500 million down to $17.5 million in new money this year. Amendment 1 mandates dollars will always be available, and it will earmark $9 billion during the next 20 years. But it's that mandate that concerns lawmakers like incoming Senate President Andy Gardner, who says it will restrict the use of that money for other things in the budget.
You know, the amendments will drive everything because they're constitutional amendments. So Amendment 1 will cost a lot of money. There's going to be some pain there.
Tuesday night, voters also resoundingly rejected a legislative plan to change gubernatorial appointments to the Florida Supreme Court and appeals courts. Amendment 3 was complicated, asking voters to decide a situation that won't occur until 2019. That year, on one day, there will be two governors, one incoming and one outgoing. At the same time, the terms of three Supreme Court justices expire. Amendment 3 would have let the outgoing governor make those appointments, something opponents said would change the political balance of the court, since the three retiring justices make up the group that tends to oppose the Republican-led legislature. The League of Women Voters of Florida also opposed the plan, and President Deidre McNabb is pleased to see it fail.
You really can't think of any other situation in which you're asking an outgoing elected official to pick the team that will be serving in the future. And that's what this proposal by the legislature was proposing to do. Voters said no, and they said no strongly.
Now that voters have spoken, it's time for the legislature to act. Florida lawmakers will have to create implementing language for Amendment 1 to line up the state's laws with what's in the Constitution. And lawmakers will also have to decide what to do about the issue of medical marijuana. While Amendment 2 failed, it still garnered a majority of voter support. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
And speaking of Amendment 2, there's been more than a little grumbling from some quarters about Amendment 2 failing despite garnering support from the majority of voters. But as Nick Evans reports, there are some pretty good reasons for requiring a supermajority.
Back in 2006, Florida voters passed a measure called Amendment 3. It raised the threshold for passing ballot initiatives in all future elections from the simple majority of 50% plus 1 to a supermajority of 60%. Supporters argued the ballot initiative process was being taken over by special interests. Oddly enough, the amendment itself wouldn't pass muster with its own requirements. The 2006 Amendment 3 passed with just 57.7% of the vote. In this year's election, Amendment 2, the one legalizing medical marijuana, reached almost exactly the same mark, 57.6. But with the supermajority requirement in place, it failed. Speaking at a post-election forum, University of Florida political scientist Dan Smith says in comparison to states that pass marijuana amendments, Florida actually has a relatively large amount of support.
The supporters of medical marijuana, Amendment 2, big losers. Even though 58% of support is higher than most measures that have passed across the country for medical marijuana. We have that 60% threshold. Most other states, we got 24 states in the District of Columbia, which now is decriminalized, you don't have to get to 60%. You only need 50% plus one.
Some students at Florida State University are upset the measure didn't pass. Here's Sadiqa Jackson.
I thought it was really unfair because if we're voting and then we fairly won the argument, then it should have been passed.
And Jackson's friend Danielle Ortiz agrees.
The majority votes for this to pass, and we're still having like this dispute about it. Why is it 60% if it's mostly the majority that voted yes?
But most students are a bit more serene. Here's Travis Hett.
I mean, it doesn't make a difference to me. It doesn't affect me directly at all.
Another student expressed faith in the system, saying the rules are in place for a reason, and even more, simply didn't have an opinion at all. Constitutional lawyer Sandy Dallenbert believes most people form ad hoc opinions about the supermajority based on specific issues.
I think most of us are not purists on this issue. I think most of us are going to react on individual provisions about whether we like them or not. And so I confess to really having the same position. If you ask me overall whether I think the 60% is a good thing, I have to say that I think it, looking back on it, I think it probably is a good thing.
And Dallenbert says it's not like 60% was picked out of thin air.
They selected the same percentage as that which applied to legislators when they voted themselves to propose a constitution amendment. So the three-fifths vote, I think, came pretty directly from the idea that legislators in proposing constitutional amendments had to have three-fifths.
In the wake of Amendment 2 failing earlier this week, activists and even some lawmakers have expressed hope the state legislature will take up medical marijuana in the upcoming session. But after all, it took an amendment to force the legislature's hand in funding environmental conservation. And that initiative, Amendment 1, had far more support than medical marijuana. It garnered the approval of nearly three-quarters of the electorate. So, come 2016, Florida voters may get reacquainted with John Morgan, the personal injury lawyer who bankrolled the Yes on 2 campaign. He's already made noise about renewing his efforts in the next cycle. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
On Tuesday, Republicans took control of the U.S. Senate, and experts say World War II is the last time so many GOP members have been slated for seats in the House. But Regan McCarthy reports the outcome was a little different in North Florida, where Democratic challenger Gwen Graham nipped Tea Party favorite Steve Sutherland in the fight for Florida's 2nd Congressional District.
Gwen Graham beat Congressman Steve Sutherland Tuesday by just about 2,000 votes.
What an incredible ride. I mean that with all my heart, mind, and soul. What a privilege to serve the people in the people's house.
Sutherland is one of just three Republican incumbents who lost seats Tuesday. Congressman Vance McAllister from Louisiana lost after a scandal involving him kissing a married staffer. Congressman Lee Terry from Nebraska also lost. He faced heavy criticism after initially refusing to give up his salary during the federal government shutdown. Sutherland's loss came down to numbers. Graham easily took traditionally Democratic counties, Leon and Gadsden, getting about twice the votes Sutherland polls, which meant she just needed to chip away at the votes Sutherland could gain in most of the district's smaller rural counties. Sutherland says he's hoping to help Graham make a smooth transition.
We will assist in any way possible in a transition because it's not about me and it's not about Gwen. It's never been about us. It's about you. It's always been about you to me. And so we're going to transition, we're going to coordinate, we're going to be very helpful because I don't want any person in Florida's 2nd Congressional District to fall between the cracks.
But the day after her victory, Graham said she knows the job she's got ahead of her will likely be anything but smooth.
I mean, I recognize I'm not naive. I know that there are going to be challenges, and I'm ready to take those challenges on. And I'm the kind of person that I continue to reach out to folks and try to build bridges that need to be built at this point. And so I will work hard to make sure that the gridlock and the dysfunction that we found, that I can be at least one voice in changing that.
Graham says she plans to hit the ground running. She's already put calls in to the state's 1st and 3rd district congressmen and hopes to team up with them. She wants to focus on growing the North Florida economy through programs to help workers get trained for the jobs available in the area. She'd also like to create a veterans database to help military members match their skills with available jobs. Graham says a lot of that will start with building relationships with key leaders in Washington, D.C. But before all of that, Graham is taking at least a little time to celebrate.
I get to dance now.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capitol Report on Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, every story we've run in this edition of Capitol Report involved voters freely casting ballots for the candidates and issues of their choice. But that hasn't always been the case. Dina Weinstein prepared this report, which originally aired as part of the National Radio Project's Making Contact segment, Thwarting Democracy, the Battle for Voting Rights.
It's June 18, 1964 in St. Augustine, Florida. A group of rabbis are praying in the Matsumoto Lodge parking lot. Miami television station WCKT captures what happens next.
A group of 70 white and Negro demonstrators, including 15 rabbis from New Jersey, showed up at the motel to pray. They were met by the establishment's owner, James Brock. While the rabbis were being arrested, Negro and white demonstrators clad in bathing suits jumped into the pool. Brock, frantic with rage, began dumping an acid cleaning agent into the water, apparently without harmful effect to the uninvited swimmers. Finally, an off-duty policeman leaped into the pool and began swinging at the demonstrators. The swimmers were dragged roughly from the water to waiting police vans.
The next day, images of the Monson Motor Lodge manager dumping acid into the pool splashed across the front pages of newspapers around the country. J.T. Johnson was one of the swimmers in St. Augustine that day.
Well, it was a little worse than Alabama to me. I mean, we took more beatings here in St. Augustine than we did anywhere. Some of the things that happened here got the Civil Rights Bill passed.
The protest also led to the largest mass arrest of rabbis in American history. Rabbi Alan Setcher was one of these religious leaders who remembers the brutality.
The cop took a cattle prod, and as I remember it, the girl was in a skirt, not jeans. And the girl was in a skirt, and he took the prod, and he shoved it up her ass, and turned it on. And then screamed, just a scream that I can hear still today. And he laughed, and then he kibitzed with his buddies.
Now, 50 years later, Setcher, five other rabbis, and Johnson came back to town to commemorate the events of 1964. This time, city officials welcomed them to lunch in the hotel on the same site they were arrested. J.T. Johnson, who was swimming in the pool back in 1964 when acid was thrown in the water, says memorials and museums are not enough to mend our societal problems.
They exist now. I mean, this not only in Florida, but in other states, too. This country has to first get rid of racism before they can deal with the issues before them.
Even as a Civil Rights Act passed, St. Augustine's leadership resisted integration. Currently, there are no black elected officials. Locals see the 50th anniversary as a public acknowledgement of the accomplishments of the activists of 1964. But many in this town continue to struggle. Among the black residents in St. Augustine, more than a third live below the poverty line. For Making Contact, I'm Dina Weinstein in St. Augustine, Florida.
That we shall overcome someday.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Nick Evans, and Jessica Palumbo. We also thank our contributing Florida public radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Ken Smith, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too. On the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust. Empowerment. Education. Employment. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.